show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271 3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello and thanks for joining the program. We're coming to the end of the text, A Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, by the Indian master Shantideva. In fact, today we start on the final chapter, which is a dedication. Now, any action we do can be divided into three parts: the motivation, the deed itself, and the dedication. And, as we all know from our previous programs, the motivation is the most important. Of course, we tend to think the action itself is, but when you think carefully, you can see that what decides whether an action is positive or negative is the motivation. I have a Buddhist friend who has a largest plot of land with a paddock outside of Whangarei. In the paddock, he keeps three or four cattle. He rescued them from the abattoir and now is just letting them live peacefully and quietly on his land until the end of their days. Now compare that with a farmer who does very much the same, but with the intention of eventually making steaks and beef stew out of his animals. Both my friend and the farmer look after their beasts well, but their motivations are very different. Because my friend cares for his cattle out of love and compassion, in karmic terms, his actions with them are positive, while the farmer's actions, even though in the short term seemingly kind, are negative, because his kindness is driven by the motivation to eventually kill and eat the cattle. So it doesn't matter so much what the action is. The motivation should be as pure and as positive as possible. Even sometimes an action may appear quite strong and apparently harmful, but until we know the motivation, we should be very careful about judging. For instance, a very powerful and apparently cruel king might be a bodhisattva in disguise. If, when the leader of a tribe dies, a bodhisattva sees that a group of very rough warlords won't stop fighting over who's next to be the king, he might appear as an extremely powerful and even tyrannical ruler to conquer the kingdom and slowly bring peace and well-being to all in it. He might have to dispose of all the other warlords in one way or another, but because the motivation is purely to bring the greatest benefit, his actions may all be positive. Now that's why, up to now, we've always taken a little time at the beginning of each program to think about our motivation. Listening to the program for present happiness, like wanting to appear as a good religious person because you wish to make a good impression on a Buddhist you're attracted to, may bring you some little benefit in this life. It may be a cause for your next relationship, though that's uncertain. Listening to the program so you can become enlightened to help all other beings in whatever way they need will, on the other hand, become a cause for your eventual Buddhahood and freedom from suffering. Now, which do you think is the better result? So, before we go on any further, let's set our motivation as we usually do, thinking, if we can, that we are participating in the program today to become enlightened for the sake of all suffering beings. Thank you. Now we've gone on some time about the motivation, let's say something about dedication. The dedication of an action covers what happens after the action and seals the action. For instance, say the farmer with the cattle decides one day that it's time for one of his beasts to contribute to his dinner table. So he slaughters it. Afterwards, he cooks and eats some of the meat, really enjoying it. He thinks that he did a good deed by killing and eating the animal. He has no regret at all. And that is like the dedication of the deed and ensures that he creates a complete negative karma of killing. Again, you will have noticed that we mostly dedicate the positive potential of a program when it comes to an end. It is usually taught that by doing that, we seal or protect the positive potential from forces that may make it degenerate. In particular, dedication prevents anger from destroying the positive potential. When I was in the monastery in South India, a couple of old Indian men came begging at my door soon after I arrived. I gave them what was to me a very small amount of money, something like 10 rupees, which comes to about 30 cents in New Zealand currency. However, that's a good amount in India, and I found myself thereafter plagued by these beggars who knocked on my door every day afterwards at any time of the day, whether I was in class or not. Now, if you know anything about the beggars in India, you will know that they are very persistent and won't take no for an answer, especially after you've given them something once. One of the old men was just like that, though the other was more dignified and didn't push much. Anyway, it became a bit of a trial, because not only did the pushy man expect his 10 rupees every day, but was dissatisfied when I gave him leftover food or anything else instead. I must admit to becoming a bit impatient with him from time to time, and that would have spoiled any positive potential from the generosity if it wasn't dedicated. In this and the following programs on this chapter, I'm mainly going to be using the commentary by Kunzun Peldon in the Nectar of Manjushri speech, because it's so detailed and gives us a lot to think about. He starts out by saying that dedication and prayers of aspiration are crucial. Dedication is pledging our positive potential to the enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings, while a prayer of aspiration is the wish that all beings attain enlightenment, unconnected with any positive potential of our wholesome deeds. He states that failing to dedicate our positive potential to the well-being of others is a fault, and quotes four things that can destroy positive potential: not dedicating it, dedicating it wrongly, bragging to others about our good deeds, and regretting those good deeds. As I mentioned above, anger can destroy positive potential, but so can many other causes. Kunzun Peldon, however, says that when we dedicate our virtue, it's like drops of water falling into the ocean, and he quotes the Akshayamati Sutra. As in the great sea, drops of water fall and will not dry until the sea itself runs dry, the virtue that to Buddhahood is pledged is not consumed till Buddhahood is gained. Thus, whatever positive potential we dedicate to gaining enlightenment will not be spent or destroyed until we get to enlightenment itself. Indeed, Kunzun Peldon writes, it will increase and actually take us there. He compares dedication to a goldsmith making things out of fine gold. The goldsmith can make ornaments, vases, and so on, which are of some small or medium value. Or he can make Buddha statues, stupas, and so on, which are of much greater value. Similarly, we can dedicate our positive potential to goals of this or coming lives, or we can dedicate to Buddhahood for the greatest benefit to all beings. And you can see the difference in value of such dedications. Kunzun Peldon also points out that for our dedication to be uncontaminated, it should be associated with a wisdom unstained by the concepts of the three spheres. This means that the person who dedicates, the recipient of the dedication, and the positive potential are all seen as being empty of inherent independent existence, even though they appear so. We shouldn't even first dedicate and then afterwards think of these three being empty, as that tends to a nihilistic view. Rather, if we find it difficult to dedicate with this wisdom unstained by the three concepts, we can make the dedication with the words in the way that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas like Manjushri and Samantabhadra did. In fact, there's a verse we can use that goes, just as Manjushri and Samantabhadra have realized things as they are, I dedicate this virtue in the best way that I may follow after them. Kunzun Peldon says that dedicating like this is a key point of great importance. He also says we mustn't let others do our dedication for us. Sometimes people who have commitments but don't have time ask monks to do their commitments for them. Of course, the dedication is also made by the monks, but neither the results of the commitments nor the dedications are all that effective. So from all this, we can see that dedication is very important in preserving and increasing our positive potential, And that's why Shantideva has written a whole chapter dedicating his teaching. Of course, he dedicates it to the happiness of all sentient beings, and, as you will see, makes quite a poetic feast of it. In her commentary to the introduction to the chapter, Pema Chodron writes that by going through his verses of dedication, we can use Shantideva's expert help to voice our own deepest wishes. This is a simple yet profound way to engage in enlightened activity, she says. At the end of any activity, a meal, a meeting, or a Dharma teaching, we can make the aspiration that any benefit we've received be shared by others. We might think of a particular person who could use some help, or the men, women, and children living in war-torn countries, or all beings everywhere without exception. I once asked Trungpa Rinpoche, that's her teacher, about sharing the merit at the end of a meal. Since I often ate mindlessly, it seemed a bit hypocritical to think I'd accumulated anything but self-absorption. He replied that since I had the good fortune to have nourishing food, which I enjoyed in a safe and comfortable environment, I actually had plenty of good fortune to share. He also reminded me of the three noble principles: good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. If we start an activity with a clear intention that it be of benefit, and if we continue with as open a mind as we can manage, then we will always have something to share at the end. Even if we become completely distracted from what we're doing, the clear aspiration we begin with transforms any action into bodhisattva activity. She writes that dedicating merit shifts our attitude. When we don't just think of ourselves, but remember the difficulties of others and their distress, our perspective widens. Dedicating merit softens us, she writes. The suffering of all the people we share this planet with becomes more real. They need help as much or more than we do. Even the ones we don't like and the ones we feel got what they deserved become the focus of dedication. These seemingly small gestures of love and concern can help heal the suffering of the world. The most significant step any one of us can make towards global peace is to soften what's rigid in our hearts. Now, in the first verse of the chapter, Shantideva wishes that through his work, all beings come to engage in the work of a bodhisattva. In other words, that all beings may be able to work towards Buddhahood. Through the virtue of having composed this work, A Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, may all beings come to engage in the bodhisattva's conduct, he writes. This is two parts, says Pema Chodron: the longing that it happens sooner than later, and the growing confidence that, and I quote, this is not only possible but inevitable. The only question is whether we choose to slow down or speed up the process. In his quite extensive commentary, Kunzang Paldin goes into some detail about how, although Shantideva was the original agent of the dedication, by participating in this teaching, we now also become such agents of dedication. Shantideva dedicates all the positive potential through his intention to practice the bodhisattva path, plus his actual practice of the six perfections, and also his development of bodhicitta. Now, those of us who haven't got there yet instead can dedicate the positive potential from all our Dharma activities, like making offerings, attending teachings, generosity, and so on. In the past, Shantideva dedicated all positive actions, past, present, and future, related to the bodhisattva conduct, in a way that was free of the concepts of the three spheres, writes Kunzang Paldin. That means he didn't only dedicate his own positive potential, but all the positive potential created by anyone, including ourselves, and intended for the bodhisattva path. However, just because he dedicated like that doesn't allow us to just to sit back and relax. We should also dedicate and mingle our virtue with his, just as we might mix a drop of water in the great ocean. We should also think that the positive potential of our practice of the bodhisattva path represents not only our own positive potential, but all the positive potential of everyone on the bodhisattva path, and so dedicate like that. We can either dedicate to all sentient beings' actual attainment of enlightenment, or to all beings being able to practice the cause for enlightenment. These two are the same, says Kunzang Peldon. He then goes on to say that we should couple our dedication with the four immeasurables: immeasurable love, immeasurable compassion, immeasurable joy, and immeasurable equanimity. Those of you who were with us some weeks back, actually a few months back now, I think, when we were discussing the chapter on patience, may remember we talked quite extensively about the four immeasurables as a basis for the development of the love and compassion that leads to bodhicitta. Kunzang Peldon writes that just as a tree absorbs water through its roots and so grows leaves and branches, loving kindness to beings will lead to compassion, which is absolutely necessary to develop bodhicitta. Meditation on loving kindness is more excellent in its effects than even the act of making offerings to all the Buddhas, he writes, and tells us of a great master by the name of Drontumba, who was listening to someone recounting the deeds of some of the previous masters. For instance, Potowa would teach to many thousands of people. Gonpapa only meditated in uninhabited wildernesses, and Ponchungwa made many representations like statues of the Buddha's body, speech, and mind. However, when Drontumba was told of a master by the name of Kampa Lungpa, who would go into the valleys where the rivers had run dry and weep, Drontumba put his hands together and highly praised him. For, he said, nothing is greater than compassion. Furthermore, according to Kunzang Peldon, if we meditate alternately on loving kindness and compassion, each destroys the obstacles of the other. By meditating on love, the mind can become excessively exhilarated, he says, while we could become depressed if we consider the suffering of all beings and meditate on compassion only. By meditating on both, we can remain more equanimous. He claims that in the best scenario, meditating on loving kindness and compassion will stop harm to all beings in the world, while in the medium case, it will protect one's country. In the least effective case, we will protect ourselves from harm and aggression. If you think about Tibet being overrun by the communist Chinese in the 1940s and 50s, even though many high masters like His Holiness the Dalai Lama meditated on love, compassion, and bodhicitta there, whether this is really so or not is difficult to say. However, certainly if we develop a softer mind and warmer heart, it stands to reason that others will find much less opportunity to act aggressively towards us. Shantideva then continues, may all beings everywhere, plagued with sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. For as long as they remain in cyclic existence, may their mundane happiness never decline, and may all of them uninterruptedly receive waves of joy from bodhisattvas. Kunzang Peldon relates these verses to the three types of suffering: suffering of suffering, suffering of change, and all-pervasive suffering. For those of you unfamiliar with these three, they are a short way of meditating on all the sufferings we go through in cyclic existence. Of course, in the first turning of the Wheel of Dharma, the Buddha mentioned eight kinds of suffering: being born as a hell being, as a hungry ghost, as an animal, or as a god, and that's four, and then experiencing things we don't want, not experiencing things we want, not getting what we desire, and having to live with the five aggregates. Later teachings expanded on the sufferings of cyclic existence until we now have a very extensive description of what it's like in its various forms. And we'll come across many of these as the chapter continues, for Shantideva includes them in his dedication. However, a brief explanation of the three sufferings is this. The suffering of suffering is what we all label as suffering: sickness, accidents, lost or stolen possessions, broken relationships, and so on. The suffering of change refers to how all our pleasures change to suffering if we don't take a break from them. At the beginning of a nice meal, the food tastes so delicious. But keep on eating and eating, and you will inevitably come to the point where you cannot even look at the food anymore. And all our pleasures are like that. And the all-pervasive suffering means that no matter where we go or what we do in cyclic existence, we cannot escape dissatisfaction. This is because as long as our minds are driven by karma and afflictive emotions, we will never be able to put down our burden of discomfort. It may appear lighter at times, much heavier at other times, but we will never be completely free of it. As Lama Tsongkhapa says in the Three Principles of the Path, we are swept away by the current of the four powerful rivers, tied by the strong bonds of karma, which are so hard to undo, caught in the iron net of self-grasping egoism, completely enveloped by the darkness of ignorance. So, while in a cyclic existence, there's no escape from the four powerful rivers of birth, aging, sickness, and death, or the chains of karma, or the self-grasping and self-cherishing that are the mother and father of all the afflictive emotions, or the inky darkness of ignorance. Of the three types of suffering, this all-pervasive suffering is really the one we have to realize to develop complete renunciation of cyclic existence. Then returning to Kunzun Peldon, he writes that the dedication of virtue to free beings from the first kind of suffering, the suffering of suffering, is the wish that through our study, contemplation, and meditation on the Bodhisattva path, all beings are immediately freed from the physical and mental torment brought about by their negative karma. And that is the dedication out of compassion. And when we wish them all an abundance of physical and mental well-being and perfect happiness, we are dedicating out of a meditation on loving kindness. Then he writes, similarly, dedication with a view to liberating beings from the suffering of change consists in the wish that, by the power of our virtue, all the world's inhabitants who have, for the time being, great prosperity, strength of body, and happiness of mind, should never lose their good fortune for as long as they remain in samsara. And this is how to meditate on loving kindness and compassion. He continues, as for all-pervading suffering in the making, this will be with us for as long as our physical and mental aggregates are defiled. Dedication with a view to freeing beings from this kind of suffering consists in the wish that unbounded multitudes of beings existing in every dimension of space be free from all-pervading suffering in the making and attain the vast, unceasing bliss of the non-abiding nirvana of bodhisattvas. This, again, is how to meditate on loving kindness and compassion. Kunzun Peldon goes on to say that by reflecting on and understanding that negative actions lead to all our sufferings, we can gain some confidence in the law of cause and effect. Then, when we search cyclic existence and find nowhere free from dissatisfaction and discomfort, we will develop a disgust with it and want to be out of it as quickly as possible. But considering that all beings caught up in the miseries of cyclic existence have at some time been our very kind parents, we will want to help them out of it as well. And Pema Chodron also makes the point that when we share our positive potential, we can think of all beings everywhere. But we shouldn't just wish them happiness for an afternoon, but forever. We must think as big as possible, she writes. For the next few verses, Shantideva dedicates his positive potential to those in the hell realms, as traditionally described. He starts off with verses 4 and 5. May all embodied creatures who throughout the universe experience hellish realms come to enjoy the bliss of Sukhavati. May those feeble with cold find warmth. May those oppressed with heat be cooled by the boundless waters that pour forth from the great clouds of the Bodhisattva's merits. Now, Sukhavati is what's known as a pure land, a place or state where a Buddha resides surrounded by Bodhisattvas. It's a very beautiful environment, conducive to Dharma practice, where there's no suffering at all. If you're born there, you may stay until you become enlightened. Sukhavati itself is the pure land of the Buddha Amitabha, and there's a whole tradition called the Pure Land Tradition that only practices to be born there. Usually, you have to be absolutely pure to be born in a pure land. But out of his compassion, before he became a Buddha, Amitabha made a vow that he would not become enlightened unless impure beings, on reciting his name, could be born in his pure land. He is now enlightened. So if we impure beings recite his name, aspiring strongly to be born in Sukhavati, we have a good chance of finding ourselves there. Thus, Shantideva dedicates his positive potential that beings in hell realms will come to be born in a place of unending bliss, where they can stay until they are enlightened. Writes Pema Chodron, Shantideva wishes well even to those we consider despicable. The minds of beings who have done horrific things, very likely enjoying them thoroughly, project the hellish environments described here. This is the kind of scenario in which Hitler, Pol Pot, or serial killers might find themselves imprisoned. One reason we are taught about the hell realms is to awaken our compassion. Another reason is to shake up our hard-hearted conventional thinking. Generally, we're glad when abusers get what's coming to them. However, these aspirations mark a profound change in the way we see things. We realize that if the abuser of the world could awaken bodhicitta, cruelty would be impossible. The hell realms would be emptied and our inhumanity to one another would cease. Many of us may not feel ready to make this wish right now. We may be in a place of resentment or bitterness that prevents us from making such aspirations for those we dislike or fear. I find it humbling that Shantideva holds no such grudges. I make the aspiration that eventually we may all be able to say these words. May those in hellish states taste the bliss and peace of perceiving the world with a clear and open mind. May they perceive the world as the pure land of Sukhavati. In a more traditional sense, Kunzang Paldon writes, in all the universal systems lying in the 10 directions, evil actions are perpetrated because of anger and other defilements. Their karmic effect is the unbounded pain of heat and cold, and such torments as being cut and dismembered in the various realms of hell. We should make the wish that by the strength of our positive actions, the outer environment as experienced by all the denizens of hell be completely purified and become like the western pure field of Sukhavati, where even the words pain and suffering have no existence, and where all is made of precious substances, where everything is spacious and mild. Let the beings that dwell in hell be purified. May Yama, the Lord of Death, become the Buddha Amitabha, and may his workers become the Buddha's 8 close sons, Avalokiteshvara, Vajrapani, and the rest. And may the dwellers in the hells be transformed into practitioners of the Mahayana, bodhisattvas adorned with the major and minor marks of enlightenment. May they have perfect happiness and joy, and without travail may they receive whatever they wish. May those who do evil, impelled by the power of their anger, abandon their wickedness, and may they truly perform the practice that will bring forth their birth in Sukhavati, the visualization of Buddha Amitabha and the recitation of his name. This is how we should meditate on compassion and loving kindness, wishing that beings be free from suffering and its causes, and that they be endowed with happiness and the causes of the same. And with that beautiful dedication, our time is up, and we must part. Please yourself dedicate all the positive potential from this program to the freedom from suffering and immediate attainment of enlightenment for all beings everywhere. I hope you will join us again next week. Thank you. And goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering. Yeah, I wish it could have been different. It is what it is. Oh, go and be free. Go and be free. Go and be free. Go and be free. If my heart cannot keep you for one more day, then you must go and be free. And be free.
get down to business. Gotta break bread.
Yeah, we gotta eat.
Yeah. If anyone up in your business, better play dead, cause I break heads. Yeah. And this is how the story goes. Seat belt strapped up, get the door open.